And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancey.
Well, tonight we have someone who is claiming to do just that. He has worked for National Security Agency, NSA, with above top clearance, above top secret clearance, specializing in electronic warfare. He also has extensive experience in automated industrial control systems, as well as an extensive background in computers and advanced electronics. He has dedicated his life to exposing the works of the elite from a technological standpoint and has achieved a unique status which enables him to commit a vast amount of time to research complex and demanding subjects. He is here tonight to discuss his study into the events leading up to the disaster at Fukushima and to offer a well-researched opinion on what the future holds for Fukushima, Japan, and the rest of the world. Now, there's a lot of documents going here. It's not just someone who's channeling an angel or who's going to say that they worked at Area 51 and then just come up with a bunch of stuff. He has a lot of links to information, pictures, diagrams to back up claims, and I've looked at it. It's very good. And so those who are by computer, I would really recommend going to our website, feettofire.com, scrolling down to see where the guest information is, because I have a link that goes to his website that will talk about it. Now, who is the his? Well, it is Jim Stone. It is a pseudonym because, well, when you're coming out against the system, you perhaps don't want to give him your Social Security number process. So that is what we would call him. And welcome to the show, Jim.
Oh, thank you very much, James, for offering me this time to have a voice. And I welcome all the guests, and especially, you know, the people who have surfed my website and have waited to hear me in person. Right, you said earlier that there is going to be a new type of warfare and a new type of terror, and I have concluded that they have given up on the terrorism angle as far as Arabs and masked men coming to get you. And they are instead going to forward their agendas by the false flag terror in the name of the environment, be it an earthquake, a tornado, any kind of a disaster that they can blame and get control. Because it really doesn't matter if an Arab does it, or if a tornado does it, if it puts you in a dire condition where you need them to provide the solution, you're at their mercy, one way or another. And so, this program is going to be a little bit different probably than anything you've heard. And my comment is that, it took these people 300 years and trillions of dollars to, build a theater of darkness. And it only takes the light of one match to burn it down. So please pay attention to what you hear here, because we are in a dire situation, and I'm just going to get going. The first thing that we need to see here is the gravity of the lies, how massive they are that we've been told just about this one simple event. If there's one event that can show you how big the lie is, it is the disaster at Fukushima. They've got all kinds of experts on the air, and it's all just a lie. The website, just in case you can't find it on James's site, is it's jimstonefreelance.com. And when you get there, you're going to see a whole bunch of links, and I'm going to go through these and explain to you what they mean.
I was just going to suggest that we give them the web page, and you did it, so, okay.
Yeah, it is jimstonefreelance.com.
All right. All right.
And I've sacrificed the home page for this, for a few hours for this program. Now, the very first thing I'd like you to look at is link titled number one, it's Vanished Reactor. And when you open this, you're going to see a diagram issued by the U.S. government for a training manual on the type of reactor that's at Fukushima. So it's an official document that I pulled this pulled a comparison diagram out of. As you can see in this document, there's supposed to be a tin metal roof on the top of this reactor that's been completely blown away. And down inside here, we have two stories of reactor sticking up that is missing in the picture to the right-hand side, which means what you're looking at here, these people are still talking about containment. They're still talking about reactor pressure. They're still talking about trying to restore things and make everything all nice and pretty. Well, every single thing that their experts have said is a lie, and they have to know it's a lie. Granted, this is a classified photo that a physicist posted on Pink Tentacle of the exploded reactor, but they ought to have been able to figure this out by now, because these have been online for a little over a month now. So if they're still talking about reactor containment, there is no containment. There's not even a reactor. And photos, at least the 1.1, which is Unit 3's core spray system out in the open. If it is, it means the reactor's guts are blowing out and laying everywhere. If you click on that link, you're going to see something that came off of drone footage that aired in Japan. And it looks to me like we have the remains of a reactor that's still trying to cool itself. These systems are extremely robust. They hold up really well despite no matter what you put them through. A reactor, there's been a lot of rifts on the GE boiling water reactor and nuclear power plants in general. But believe me, when we're talking nuclear power, we're talking something that is really, really made extremely well. And so you can blow things to pieces and they'll still function. And what we have here is obviously a spray system of some type that is still functioning. That's just laying in the debris.
So this is the next picture, right? This is the next
picture. Yes, it's in the next picture.
Okay.
And obviously it's not functioning at full capacity, but it is still functioning. So from what it looks like, the water was getting circulated through the fuel rods. I don't know exactly how this reactor works. I have a really good idea. I've spoken to reactor operators, you know, it's a long story, but I've really paid attention to this subject. I don't know exactly what this is that we're looking at, but I hypothesize at least that it's the remainder of the guts of the reactor laying out in the open. Because that is the color of the fuel rods that go in, and it's about the right scale, all those bent things. That's pretty spooky. Now, if you click on one thing that the media has lied about completely and misrepresented completely was the scale of this disaster. First of all, if you go back to the picture number one, and you look at that reactor and the way that building is exploded apart, the fuel pools are completely gone, and that means that we have thousands of tons of plutonium laying everywhere outside that facility. They have never told us about this. They've never been honest about this, but it's obvious when you look at that diagram that the fuel pools are gone. Where did that fuel go? Well, if you I'm sure you all saw the mushroom cloud. That's a photo that's coming up. Well, actually, it's on the bottom of the
map. It's right underneath it, yeah.
It's down there at the bottom. You can see the mushroom cloud that thing made. Now, if you look at this picture of the destroyed facility, this is picture number two. This is also a classified photo, and I haven't seen anyone else have this anywhere. But you can just go online and get it at Pink Tentacle and make sure you expand this because it's an extremely detailed photo that lets you see exactly what's going on there. If you look up on the very top of the photo, it says, this car shows you how big this all is. And it looks like a flip-over pickup truck or SUV that's laying there, and it's just this little teeny tiny thing. And what I did to show you the scale of the disaster was I took Photoshop and I copied that car or vehicle, and I pasted it on top of Unit 4's reactor dome. Which is, Unit 4 had been disassembled for refueling, so the explosion there, had been disassembled for a shroud replacement, The boiling water reactor has a stainless steel shroud on the inside that has problems with cracking, and most nuclear facilities will just weld those cracks, but Fukushima was really a well-maintained facility, so they had decided to go ahead and replace the entire reactor shroud. And so the fact that that reactor is in pieces is just because it's been disassembled.
Yeah, but then it exploded anyway, though, didn't it, or no?
Well, yeah, it exploded because that's where we're getting down to the...
Okay.
Yes, there was whatever happened at reactor 4 was the equivalent of building 7 on 9/11. There's no way that this particular thing
possibly
happened.
This reactor was actually powered down and not running at the time.
It was powered down
Wow.
and disassembled. The
Wow.
core had been pulled, and they were actually replacing the lining on the inside of this reactor. That is a habit of cracking, and when it does, it can cause fuel rods to stick. It's something that they know about, but it's never happened. So all these nuclear facilities maintain this very well. It's just in the specs where if it does this, it can stick. Anyway, so this reactor was just an open tube. There is nothing in there at all. No core, no uranium, no nothing. No steam separator. It was completely disassembled, and it exploded anyway. And so how did that happen? Well, we'll get into that later. Now, if you look down here on the right-hand side, where you can see Unit 3 completely blown away, I've also taken that car and I've laid it on top of, it looks like a Suburban or something.
Yeah.
I've laid it on top of that wall. And if you look at that, you can see how thick those walls were that got blown away. Now, they're trying to tell us that hydrogen blew these massively built structures apart, which just isn't plausible in any way. There's no way that hydrogen is going to be doing this. Hydrogen produces what's called a non-ideal subsonic explosion. If you take a perfect oxygen and hydrogen mix, your shock wave cannot exceed the speed of sound. And if it's an air hydrogen mix, the shock wave is even slower. Now, if you seal that shock wave off so that it has no place to go, it can develop pretty high pressures, but certainly not enough to blow concrete like that. And every single one of these buildings had just basically a tin roof over the top, and that would have provided a path for the hydrogen for the expansion to go. There's no way that this could have happened. Second of all, if you look at the white stack there, those white stacks, you can see the listing is, this hydrogen stack was installed after Three Mile Island to get rid of hydrogen in emergencies. These stacks need no electricity to function. The blasts were not caused by hydrogen. What these are is during the Three Mile Island incident, they had, the zircon cladding in the fuel rod caused the hydrogen to be separated from the oxygen. In other words, at beyond a certain temperature and pressure, the oxygen just wants to stick to the zircon rather than the hydrogen. And the zircon cladding is just for the fuel rods to isolate your fuel. So it's because uranium with plutonium, I don't know if there's oxidation issues or what, but it's a coating that they put on those pellets to keep the fuel preserved. Anyway, these vents were installed after Three Mile Island because at Three Mile Island they did have a hydrogen explosion also when they melted down their reactor. But that explosion at Three Mile Island basically just scared employees. It didn't cause any kind of damage to the facility. Even still, the nuclear industry is really, really, you know, it's a really careful, really well-run industry, and they will do things that are way overboard just for the absolute safety. So what this stack does is it's hooked up directly to the vents on the reactor, and if there's any kind of a problem with that reactor where it does produce hydrogen, this stack takes it directly outside.
Let me stop here for 1 second. Is that an ongoing question is going to be coming, is that if I'm in the nuclear industry and I build nuclear reactors, I'm going to know what you're saying. So I'm going to look at this and go, wait a minute, there's something wrong. Just like when the buildings collapsed in 9/11. If you build those type of buildings, you're going to go, wait a minute, that shouldn't happen like that. And yet,
yes.
You know, so now it's like there's going to be people in the nuclear industry knowing this and sitting back going, oh, boy, you know.
Yeah, well, they are to a degree, but what they're saying is, well, there's no way this could happen. They must have just run the thing like a piece of garbage. But I have confirmed there is a nuclear, it's one of the links, there is a nuclear agency that oversaw Fukushima, and they said that that place was maintained like you wouldn't believe, that the Japanese engineers were excellent, and yet they still towed the line and said the official story, which is just galling. Fukushima was a very, very well-maintained facility. It was overbuilt. It was tougher than it had to be. It's a long story. The Mark I containment, which is, you know, it's been it's received a lot of ridicule over this because it is an underbuilt containment. But you didn't have to have the Mark I containment, built to spec. You could have it overbuilt. And Fukushima was one of those facilities. So, yeah, the Mark I containment isn't the best. But certainly for a hydrogen blast, it's just like, you know, when you've got outside walls that are at no point thinner than 4 feet thick, solid concrete, you've got a pretty good containment system. And then, I don't know the exact measurement of the inside containment that's actually around the reactor, but from the diagram, it looks like it's right around 12 feet thick. And then obviously with a car laying on top of the wall, you know, the supports are, you can see that that's a pretty beefy structure there. And then, if you look on the other diagram, you can see that car where it's sitting is actually sitting on, it's up about 20 feet. That's just the column it's on, a cross column. Anyway, so we've got a good idea of the scale of the disaster. I'm going to back out of here. Now we have to get on to, the other lie. Associated with the Fukushima and the Japan disaster, and it was the earthquake. If you click on number 3, you'll see the seismic reading from station MYG-004. MYG-004 it's one of many stations in Japan. They've got all kinds of earthquake monitoring stations all over that country because it's like earthquake central. And so when this quake happened, they got a really, really good recording of what was going on. Station MYG-004 was closest to the epicenter of the earthquake, according to Japan's own data, and yet our media is telling us this story about the epicenter being out in the ocean. The seismic data does not support that at all. Even the U.S. Geological Survey is supporting the 9.0 and the epicenter out in the ocean. But the top ground acceleration measured during the earthquake was registered at MYG-004, and it was a seismic intensity of 6.67, which means that there was no 9.0. And if you look at the tsunami videos of the tsunami coming in, it's obvious that the tsunami is coming in and destroying pristine cities that never got hit by anything. There you cannot find earthquake damage anywhere.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. When they do show it coming in. It is. What's good here is that the information you're presenting is kind of hidden in plain sight, and when you take a step back and say, "Here, look at this," you go, "Oh, yeah, you know, that's right. That's a good point." You know, so on.
Yes, and when you go into the regional seismograms, I've got that link here. It's number 4. All this information was pulled out of a really, really detailed Japanese seismology site, written in Japanese, and I just had to translate it and make do with what I had. Unfortunately, they used some of the standardized numbers here. Okay, so we're looking at here.
Now this is the next one now. We're looking at the number, what, 4?
At number 4. Number 4.
All right.
Now, when you look at this, it's important to understand what these graphs are saying. Here we have a 6.67. And at MYG-004 with a top rating of 2800. Now I studied, and I couldn't figure out what these numbers really, really meant. Other than that, I know now that a seismic intensity of 2800 or 2750 right around there on these charts equals a 6.67 reading. If you look at MYG-011. You can see that it has a really sharp spike, and that means that the sharp spike, in contrast with the seismic intensity being the highest, means that this station was closest to the epicenter. Because when you get an earthquake, that the initial break is like a thunderclap, and if you're really close to the thunderclap, you'll hear a sharp crack, but you won't really hear that much of an echo afterwards. When you get further away from where that sharp thunderclap is, that's where you get the really, really heavy rumbling of the thunder. And if you look at down at the bottom here at station MYG011, which was way out on a peninsula, closest to the epicenter, this, as far as the epicenter that the USGS and got officially reported in the press, it was only 24 miles from station MYG011. And yet, when you look at this, it only has about a fifth of the intensity of MYG004, and it has the signature of the seismic signature that indicates that it's way far away from the epicenter. It's just the rumble. It's like the rumble. You can see on the top on MYG004 the sharp spike.
Yeah, it would be analogous, I think, to next being close to where lightning strikes and the thunder versus far away.
Yes. That's what you got. You've got the distant rumbling. Now, another thing that these charts are showing here, and why I selected these charts, is that there were three different epicenters in this quake spread out across the backbone of Japan. Stations MYG013, MYG004 were at the at two separate epicenters. If you look at MYG013's graph, it has the sharp spike in the first event. MYG004 has a sharp spike in the second event. And if you go down to the bottom here, here's IDR003, which is like 100 miles away from the other two events. And it's a completely different seismic event, yet they're calling it the same thing because it happened at the same time.
Hmm.
So we have three separate seismic events going on here. Well, how can that happen? And I was like, you know, how do you get three separate seismic events that are all small and then the tsunami worthy of a 9.0 when there's no damage anywhere in the country? If you look at the earthquake photos, you're not going to find a single downed bridge or skyscraper or anything. There's just nothing got wrecked. Now, if you go down to the next to number five, this will link you to a Wikipedia article about.
Let me stop there 1 second. We're going to take a break in a second, but let me.
Okay.
And we'll come back and start off there. But as far as seeing the damage, I remember seeing the videos of people, you know, having in the streets and having some, you know, trash falling and stuff like that. But it wasn't, you know, sides of buildings falling or anything like that. So while there might have been something happening, the video.
Yes, they had a minor earthquake. A 6. The real earthquake was rated as a 6.8. Which is still a significant earthquake, but not for Japan.
All right, well.
It's one that's going to mess up store shelves and empty your kitchen countertops out. You know?
All right,
it's
well, let's hold on there. We'll take a break and we'll come back. And if you're listening, jimstonefreelance.com, follow the bouncing ball as we go through these things because there's a lot of data here that your own eyes can walk through. So hold on, and we'll be back with Jim Stone after these messages. All right, we are back live, showing the rainbow through the dark. We are looking at a website, and I'm getting a bunch of emails asking for the website again, jimstonefreelance.com, all one word, jimstonefreelance.com, as we follow along with Jim Stone's talking about what really happened in the reactors. And let me bring it back, Jim. You know what? A lot of people are going to be listening to this in some type of recorded form and delayed form. Do you think you can keep a link up on your main site to come to this page for a few weeks to come?
Oh, sure. Sure, definitely.
Yeah, just put a link on there from the show because you're very good. I like your documentation. We're going through it, and people are going to listen on delayed broadcast. There's a station in England that plays us, and then there's the archives, in which, you know, many thousands download, and this way they could follow along with the bouncing ball at a later date.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I want to go back and recap a couple of things that I missed. The station MYG011 was the closest to the epicenter, and its reading was a 5.63. This is on link number 3.
Number 3, okay.
Got it back out here. Yeah, seismic station MYG004 is what the link is, but there's actually a whole bunch of seismic stations on that link.
Yeah, look at that. All the seismic stations are you know, under six, or, you know.
Yes, except for, well, there's a 6.02 down by Sendai and a 5.93 on the other side of Sendai. And Sendai, you know, is a city where they should have gotten at least an 8.5 to an 8.6 or 7's worth of shaking. And nothing happened there. There's just nothing that happened there. The only thing they got was a tsunami. So this whole thing is really suspicious. So what we have here is the 9.0 that I've got marked out in the water. That is where the official earthquake happened, as far as, you know, basically the phony 9.0. What I have here is a distance marked off in miles to the nearest seismic station on Japan's mainland, which is 24 miles. 24 miles away from this 9.0, they got a reading of a 5.63. Which is impossible, because we're talking, this station should have been reading at least 1,070 times as much energy at only 24 miles from that station. I mean, it's 24 miles from the epicenter. In other words, these charts alone, and the Japanese, I don't know why they're going along with this, but they are saying that it's a 9.0. If you go to their site, they've got the original site listed. But when you look down at the very, very bottom after you translated, they're saying this earthquake was a 6.8. But officially they're saying it's a 9.0. So it's like they've got a gun to their head.
Yeah.
They are being told to stay quiet about this. But their seismologists are putting in the graphs and putting in the charts the truth, and they are just hoping that someone to figure out that there is something wrong, that this was an ambush, that it was an attack of some sort. It was a military operation, and the numbers show it, and the pictures show it. And all the evidence is weighing against the official story when you actually look what's out there. Now I'd gone on to the Wikipedia article. If you scroll down on this article, it actually is the best one out there. I looked and looked and looked, and the USGS. It stops at magnitude 7, which is ludicrous.
What number is this number five?
It says a 9.0 will devastate an area over 1,000 miles across.
Okay.
Now, the Wikipedia article actually says it'll do thousands of kilometers across. So I'm being conservative when I say 1,000 miles across. Now, Japan suffered major damage in the Kobe quake, which is only a 6.9. And some say it was a 7.2. So, you know, officially it's a 6.9. And if you have a 9.0, a 9.0 is going to register, actually give you the shaking of a 7.0 1,000 miles away. It's approximately what it will do. It might be down into the sixes 1,000 miles away, but, you know, the high six is like maybe 6.8. And it also weighs into how deep the earthquake is. If it's closer to the surface, your shaking is going to be more intense up close and not as much further away. If it's really deep, it's going to carry further and harder, and then not shake the local area nearly as much. But even still, a 9.0, no matter where it happens, if you're as far as Sendai away from it, which is only about a little over 50 miles, you're going to be toast. You're down because you're basically at the epicenter. I have prepared a chart, a linear representation of seismic energy. All these charts that you look at, they're exponential charts. And so people don't really get a feel for how big, a 9.1 is and how the Richter scale actually works. If you open up, link 5.1,
okay.
I've got here a chart prepared based upon just a standard formula, and it actually marks out where your different intensities fall as far as the Richter reading. And so you can, and it's 5,000 pixels high, so you gotta look over on the left-hand side of your screen. If you click on it, it's just gonna look like a blur over there.
Right.
Okay, if you look at that, what this is, you know, pretty much everybody knows that a 6.0, has 1/10 the power of a 7.0, and an 8.0 is 10 times a 7.0, and a 9.0 is 10 times an 8.0. In real life, this chart shows you what that actually represents.
Plus, I want to add in there that they have changed the Richter scale and knocked it back one. So a 9.0 nowadays would actually have been a 10.0 on the old scale.
Okay, you know, I wasn't aware of that. But it, you
it just
know,
shows
I
how big a 9.0
I,
is. It just shows how big
yeah,
a 9.0
is. I didn't care about earthquakes or anything, and I just applied engineering and math to do this chart, and engineering
right.
and math to do all this study. If you look here, you know, the San Francisco quake is all the way down here at the bottom. It's like 15 pixels off the bottom. If you scroll up, you can get to, a little bit off the bottom. We get to the great, Tokyo earthquake that happened in 1923 that just scared Japan so bad and just trashed Tokyo, and they upgraded all their buildings over it. If you go up further, 8.4 is Tsar Bomba. That's the, if you detonated the biggest nuke detonated, it'd be an 8.4 if you did it underground. Next one is a full power version of that bomb. They were too afraid to test it. And then if you get up here to 8.8, now this 8.8 is a 2010 Chilean quake, and we're getting into some serious power here. If you look, Chile had specially built its buildings because they have a history of amazing earthquakes down there. And they have the largest earthquake in recorded history, which was a 9.5 back in the 60s. And after that devastation, they really took building codes seriously. And so they came out of this 8.8 fairly well. But even if you look at the damage pictures from that 8.8, they're still just, they took major damage there. And then all the way up into the sky, because the chart keeps spreading out because there's more and more energy per rating, we've got this magnitude 9.1. That's like three times or four times the power of that quake down in Chile. Yet when you go through the earthquake photos, there's no damage anywhere. So that is something to really scratch your head about and say, well, was this earthquake real or not? Or
you know, you got a good point there. You got a good point there about bringing up the earthquake in San Francisco, where you have, you know, pieces of road falling from the sky, you know, because it was knocked down roads and did all kinds of stuff. And here we got one that's hugely bigger, and you don't have any damage.
Yes, yes, it's impossible. It's impossible. A lot of the structures that are in those tsunami videos were built way back, you know, 50, 60 years ago, before they really had the modern codes. And another thing that's really important to know is that this district of Japan that this earthquake supposedly happened in has no history of really bad seismic activity. The really bad earthquakes in Japan are all down south in Tokyo, so in that region. There, this region that got this earthquake is just, they're not prepared for it nearly as much as Tokyo, and they still took no damage. So the next link is a collage of the different different it's screen captures out of various videos where you can see the tsunami rolling in, and you look through all those and you can't see any damage. Even here, the very first picture, I chose that one. Because here we have wood-framed houses that are stucco. Stucco wood-framed houses, mostly, predominantly. There's no cracks in the stucco. None of them are knocked out of plumb. None of them lost their balconies or anything. It's just this pretty neighborhood just getting ready to get pounded by the tsunami coming in.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I linked... further down here, if you go to the Japanese newsroom, I've got the full seismic chart put out by the USGS, but I've got to explain some of these. Click on the Japanese newsroom. That has in it a couple of charts put out by the USGS, and they show that at this Japanese newsroom, this is the exact reference, Asian for newsroom, they said that this newsroom pulled 3.1 Gs of force during the earthquake. And so I've got a link to the video down at the bottom of the page.
Man.
You can actually watch what happens in the video for real. If you look at these charts here, my connection is slow. I gotta wait. I don't remember if it's exactly a 3.1. It's a 3 point something. Oh, it's a 3.2 G's at 0.36 seconds into this chart. Anyway. we have here a chart where they said it pulled 3.2 Gs. You know, if you have, if you pull 0.08 Gs on the ground, or if you pull 1 G on the ground, it's the exact same thing as taking a skyscraper and having it mount vertically to the ground and stick out horizontally and then support its weight. So when, if you pull even 0.8 Gs in an earthquake, you're going to have widespread devastation. And yet, at the bottom of this picture, the laser printer is still sitting on the table. It's like, what are you talking about?
It should have been like a blender. I mean, it should look like a blender hit.
Yeah, it's just silly. It is just silly.
Wow.
The lies that they told are so grave. And I chose this picture and this newsroom and this video because this ties it down to a fixed location that was within a mile of one of the stations that the USGS used to build its charts. It is the one that built this 3.2 G chart. And what's worse is that MYG004, where it was the true epicenter, they said that at that location the earthquake pulled 12 G's, which is just ludicrous.
Yes.
So
you got people who are like fighter pilots and people who've been in the war, you know, pilots, they all know that, wait a minute, 12 G's? You know.
Well, 12 G's is so high that if you're like leaning up against a rock and that thing thrusted in you, it'd kill you.
Yeah.
You'd get killed just from being out in the environment. We're talking that is so far beyond reality. And my original comment was, can you tell me where the mountain range was that got developed by this, or did it get swallowed by a volcano? And I changed that in the article to geographical changes, because you wouldn't exactly get a mountain range from that, but you'd certainly get new hills, things like that. We're talking that's a great, huge, disruptive earthquake.
I'm looking at 12
G's on the ground is unbelievable. Anyway,
I'm looking at the pictures you have posted from the other earthquake.
The Kobe earthquake.
Yeah.
That happened in Japan, too. I mean, everybody thinks that, well, maybe the buildings held up because Japan builds it for earthquakes. Well, yeah, they do build them for earthquakes, but you know, if the going gets too rough, they're going down.
Holy cow, this is big time difference looking at these pictures on that link. Holy cow.
And that Kobe quake was only a 6.9.
Oh, man, these things are, their buildings are just tossed around like chicken bones.
Well, the reason why that happened was because the earthquake happened at a shallow depth, and you know how I said the closer to the surface you are, the more energy you get into the surface. And so, you know, typically a 6.9 is going to happen, you know, 50 kilometers down. Here it happened, like 20 kilometers down. As closer to the surface, more energy made it there. Well, the trouble then is that they're saying that this earthquake, this 9.0, was also a shallow earthquake. So we're talking it should have been tossed around in Sendai 100 times as bad as it was in Kobe.
No, they're saying it was a shallow,
saying it was a shallow earthquake as well, which is just ludicrous. Because,
wow.
You know, they got to get a reason for that tsunami.
Yeah.
You ain't going to get the tsunami.
That's true.
From a really deep earthquake.
That's true.
Everything, every last thing we have here is rigged based on tsunami data. Okay, now I'm gonna get onto the military operation where they destroyed Fukushima. There were, prior to this earthquake, Japan had offered to enrich uranium for Iran. And Israel didn't take too kindly to that, at least as far as I turned up in my investigation, Israel wasn't too happy about that. So they immediately set up front companies masquerading as security companies, and one of these security companies got access to Fukushima and basically came in with 1,000-pound cameras that looked just like gun-type nuclear weapons, convinced the plant operators that they really were security cameras, got them in there, split, planted Stuke's net, and left. That's where we're going with this. And that's why I made very, very clear here that reactor 4 had been defueled, and had the core taken out of it, and it exploded anyway.
Boy, talking about a smoking gun or the elephant in the room, it's kind of hard to have a nuclear explosion when it's not running. I mean, that's like the big hello, you know, wake up.
Yes. It's the building. It is the building 7. Anyway, I got to scroll down here.
Now, it's important. You said something really quick, and I want to mention that what you're saying is the cameras that they brought in for security, which I'm sure had some kind of camera in it, but when you actually show the breakdown of the nuclear firing device, you know, and it looks exactly like the camera. So that's something we want to go make sure we go to.
If everybody goes down to link number 32 all the way down on the bottom called Magna BSP's camera, click on that. And it's going to pull up two diagrams of gun-type nuclear weapons and Magna BSP's camera. So what we have here is, you know, this. If you look on the bottom of this camera, I'm only estimating the weight, and I actually am underestimating because this thing probably actually weighs closer to 5,000 pounds.
What kind of camera is that?
you know, when you get people's trust, they'll believe anything. You know, and so here's this company that just hates the Arab terrorists, you know, and they're just the victims, and so you just trust them, you know, and I guess it didn't dawn on the Japanese that offering Iran enriched uranium might make a little enemy there. If you look at the bottom of this thing is very poorly built, but this is what went into Fukushima. If you look at the bottom here, I mean, it's actually well made, but it's just not pretty. You know, the newer ones, if you go and you type Magna BSP's camera, they call them biscopic cameras. If you type it in, you'll see a really, really nice looking graphical representation of this camera. But to date, this is what they have, what you're seeing here in this picture. And so it's a pretty exposed, obvious thing. The whole purpose for the lenses on the bottom and the lenses on the top, what they're saying is when you put the lenses far apart, you can get a 3D image at a great distance. So the whole marketing for this thing is you can put it in a location and then look out for miles, and it's going to be able to tell in 3D even at a distance, which is really useful on an airstrip. And so, you know, it makes sense. The trouble is that other people are making the same type of camera called a stereoscopic camera. You can do this with just two small cameras that are attached to the same pole with distance between them. You don't need this giant 1,000-pound thing with a barrel and everything else on it. This is just nonsense. If you look on the bottom, you can see that the metal, it's designed to be picked up with a forklift or something else.
Yeah.
It's very, very robust on the bottom. There's some weight there. This isn't some little lightweight thing. And, you know, I said 1,000 pounds in the article, but, you know, a gun-type nuke usually will go like maybe 4,000 pounds. So that's probably closer to what it actually is. And it's kind of hard to get an idea of the scale for this. I forgot to link a picture of one of these actually installed. But I'm not going to find that now.
All right, let me ask you to stop for a second. I just had a fast blast from somebody, and they said, this is from Neil. He said he was living in Osaka during that Kobe quake. It's about 80 kilometers from Kobe. And during the Kobe quake, we had damage in Osaka that was far away. So what he is saying about the Sendai is right on. So there you go. We got a listener who actually was in the Kobe quake and saw the damage.
Can you tell him, please fire me an email at james@jimstonefreelance.com. If you have experience in Japan with their earthquakes, I really want to hear from you.
Okay.
Well, this investigation is ongoing. I'm not stopping this anytime soon.
All right. Well, you did that. So he will.
I'll give out my email address. I want to hear from people. Hear their grievances and their opinions and other things like that. Now, here's a really important thing. When we're getting back to the three different epicenters being to this quake, I had wondered how on earth they managed to get three different epicenters, because what I believe they did, and you know, obviously I can't prove it unless I talk to Netanyahu, but what I believe they did for their operation is they planted these nuclear weapons inside of Fukushima, they planted the Stuxnet virus, they dropped a nuke off the coast of Japan, and you know, in the official release, they said the earthquake happened in the Japan Trench, but when you overlay the map put out by the USGS and by the Japanese with Google images, with Google Maps, when you overlay them, this earthquake or this event happened, you know, well before the Japan Trench. It actually happened in the shallow water before the trench.
All right, well, let's just hold on there. We'll go back with that list, and we'll start when we come back, because I don't want to, you know, I want to keep it nice, and I want to stop right in the middle of anything important, so hold on. And we'll continue talking with Jim Stone, jimstonefreelance.com. If you are listening, get to that website. There's a lot of great links that are there. If you're listening in a replay format, he will put links on that website to lead you to this page that we're looking at, so you can look at that in absentia. So hold on. We'll continue. Right now we're live talking with Jim Stone about the nuke, actually, that did the dirty work at Fukushima. Well, that's, we got our, we have a Perry Mason, or at least a Paul Drake here today. Jim Stone is investigated what really happened at the reactor at Fukushima. JimStoneFreelance.com is the way to follow along as he's presented a lot of data. Here we have 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. And welcome back, Jim. Now, I was looking here. I was looking when I was going through your in the break, and I looked at number 28, which is Brown's Ferry inner containment door, and Fukushima was thicker. And I was like, wow. And that.
Yeah, And you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to everything. But yeah, we're talking about these facilities were robust. The whole thing about hydrogen blowing up apart is just a pipe dream. It would not happen. We got a NORAD style blast door there.
That's, I mean, see, this is what I like about what you got here is you're not just saying this like all the, you know, the container couldn't handle it or whatever. You're showing a picture of it and it's like, whoa, that is a big door.
Yeah. Yeah, Brown's Ferry is actually overbuilt too. That's the TVA. You know, they wanted a high quality facility. The door does not necessarily have to be that thick.
Yeah, but you said overbuilt. I don't think that word exists when you're talking about nuclear power, which could, you know, destroy a planet. You know,
no.
So I mean, I like overbuilt.
Like what I said, the Mark I containment got a lot of ridicule because it was too thin, and people knew that, and so they had it overbuilt, and that's how they answered it. Obviously, that door at Brown's Ferry is not 4 feet thick. I didn't really scale it out, but it's more than 4 feet. Anyway, I'd like to point everybody to link number 16, and that's a military briefing with Secretary of Defense William Cohen back in 1997. Now, I had heard about scalar weapons and EM technology and all this other stuff and how destructive they could be, but I didn't believe it because I had a really good technical background, and it just sounded like it was fantasy. And the reason why it sounded like fantasy to me was because I could only relate to what I'd been taught and what I'd experienced with and everything else. Well, so when reviewing the seismic data for that supposed 9.0, though, I knew that there were like three small simultaneous inland epicenters. You can tell that. That's why I went over that first chart. There were three epicenters. You don't have three epicenters on one quake. That just doesn't happen. And so I knew right from the beginning that these quakes were artificially created, and I didn't know if Japan was doing nuclear tests and Israel got wind of them and started their operation based upon the timing, you know, that their intelligence said they're going to detonate these three nukes and try to hide it as a natural earthquake. I didn't know if Israel had gotten access to lava tubes and tunnels and gotten the nukes underground to set them off, you know, and so I wasn't saying anything because I was hunting for lava tubes. I was trying to get information on Japan, maybe doing a nuclear test. Well, it turns out I didn't really need to. Because in this article, this military briefing from Secretary of Defense William Cohen, he stated, here's a quote, "Others are engaged in even an eco type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through their use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real. And that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts, and that's why this is so important. William S. Cohen, April 28, 1997. And what was left unsaid by William Cohen, obviously, is that these systems would have been developed by DARPA and owned by America first. He's worried about other people having it, obviously, but obviously we have it. We're always the first ones with everything like this. I mean, maybe the Russians, but definitely we had our own systems at that time. And what is spooky about this is the fact that he said this in 1997, which means that all the way back in 1997, we had equipment that could set off volcanoes and trigger earthquakes, and he knew about it and stated it in a military briefing. Well, we're now 14 or 15 years down the road. Obviously, we've gotten better at it. And now I'm going to say these three quakes with different seismic signatures occurring at different locations at the exact same time and getting recorded at the same quake, as the same quake, most likely were triggered by an EM weapon. And that is how they got the timing they needed to set off a tsunami bomb, to set off, to activate Stuxnet. You know, they had everything ready to go. This is 100% false flag right from the start. At first, I kind of thought that maybe they had a natural earthquake because Japan has them all the time and they just sat around waiting for it. Now I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that they actually triggered the quake.
Well, I know I didn't read it yet, but you have number 18 there was Benjamin Fulford. I remember him saying quite a while ago, and I don't know what there's various different opinions about Benjamin Fulford, but he did mention that and it was a interview with an official in Japan who said that they were blackmailed basically and threatened with an earthquake device.
You know, it all makes sense. What I believe is that Japan is currently under a nuclear threat. I think what they did was they said, you know, you're going to enrich uranium for Iran. You're now our enemy. And we can't have people running around and supporting our worst enemy, Iran. You're on par with them. So what we're going to do, we're going to blow up Fukushima. We're going to give you a really bad tsunami so that you know that we're serious. We've got five other nukes off the coast of Japan. And we're going to set those off. If you don't say that earthquake, that little 6.8 was a 9.0 out in the ocean, if you don't say that Fukushima blew up because you were negligent, if you don't go through down this list and say exactly what we want you to, we're going to set off other nukes and wipe off Tokyo with a tsunami. We're going to wipe out other port cities or other ocean cities with a tsunami. I really think that Japan is being held a nuclear hostage. It's the only thing that can explain why they're going along with this. You know, Japan knows that those reactors are gone, and yet they're not saying anything about it. They're not saying a thing. They know that reactor 4 was defueled, and they're not saying a thing. They know all of this stuff, that it couldn't have happened, that they lost control of their nuclear facility, and the thing blew up all on its own, and they know all this, and they're being quiet, and there's got to be a reason why. And the only reason would be a continued threat. And so that loops onto another thing is now we've got a nation running around. I'm really, really worried about what's going on in the heartland right now with the floods and the storms, which I don't believe are real. They're real, but I think they're synthetic.
They are suspicious. I mean, I've lived in this area all my life, and I just started noting in the late 90s odd patterns, and the last couple of years have been way odd. And these storms are coming in like blockbuster, you know.
Yes, I have on my site a picture of one of the beams that makes the clouds. I actually got that.
Oh.
And I actually wrote, but I removed it to put that front page up. But I've actually I actually had an article about HARP and weather modification up. Should be able to find the file name here.
Yeah, I looked at that initially. That was your front page before the show started.
It was there, and I removed it for this show. But basically, what that image shows is a beam coming out of the southwest corner of Delaware. And it looks like it's about 300 miles long.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen that, no, yeah.
Yeah, it's a perfectly straight beam, of weather, perfectly straight. It's like the weather is being formed along this, and it's straight edge sharp. You don't get that kind of stuff. And the regular clouds are moving around it in their odd forms, and it only appears for one frame and the weather radar, and it's done. You have to see it to know what I'm talking about. Now, if you type jimstonefreelance.com/harptype system, that's the name of the JPEG, you're going to get a diagram of how HARP can be used to heat the atmosphere and trigger weather. Okay, now that's kind of like off topic for Fukushima, except for now people are convinced that when you get a nuclear reactor wet, it explodes. When you flood a nuclear facility, it explodes. It loses its generator and it explodes. That's a dangerous precedent because right now, these storms along the Mississippi are being artificially made. I'm sure of it. And they are trying their darndest to flood out several different nuclear facilities along the Mississippi. And if they can do that, you know, these elites, they may not have been happy with Japan for offering enriched uranium to Iran, but pretty much the whole world is their enemy. If you're not going to sit down and be their willing slave, they're going to find a way to make you a willing slave. And if they succeed in causing another Fukushima in America that takes out our heartland with nasty radiation so that we can't eat the food, we're going to have famines. We're going to have a reason for the FEMA camps to open up. Most of the people that listen to this broadcast know about the FEMA camps. Jesse Ventura did with his FEMA camp expose, you know, it was pretty well done, you know, because he did the threat fusion centers, but he never really did get a picture of a real FEMA camp. Back in 2003, I followed an internet tip, and I actually did. And these FEMA camps, they are nasty beyond belief. The compound that I found was called a military hospital. But, you know, there was no military base. It's a long story, but it was called a psychiatric treatment facility. And I accidentally happened upon the fence where there was a guard shack, and I whipped a Uri real fast and panicked. But what I saw was razor wire stacked 12 feet high on the inside, in like a triangle formation. And then a corridor, and on the inside that's like closest to me, along the outer fence, there's an electrical fence on the end of giant insulators that like are the type that you see on power poles, and warning signs everywhere of 27,000 volts.
Let me pop in here. The thing with these FEMA camps is that there's not a lot of them, and so they can't be for the general public. There's just too many of them. I think they're going to be used, but they're going to be used for specific people for specific reasons, and the rest of us, are just going to be out here. They're going to be used to keep people out just as well as keep people in.
Well, I think if you're running around just doing an expose on Fukushima, you're probably...
Yeah, well...
You know, I'm a little bit worried about those kids.
I mean, the good news is that it seems to me that for the most part, the powers that be, are extremely arrogant, and that
the arrogance is unbelievably strong, and the intelligence is not very high.
So the first to go are going to be the ones who can yell the loudest, so to speak, I think. And granted, even though this data is very good and damaging, and, this could get out, this could go viral, but it seems that if they can do this to Japan, as you've outlined, which is very feasible, they're beyond what, quote, we can do. I mean, it's like Ron Paul or anybody. What can someone do? I mean, this is well beyond.
We have pretty much a hopeless situation.
Yeah, I know. So it's like they're sitting back going, sure, go ahead, do your radio show, do your stuff, tell people what to do, because if we are in the midst of drowning the Midwest, if we are in the midst of creating all this stuff, I mean, it can't be stopped by us unless there's a metaphysical component to us, or, you know, Jesus comes, or aliens, or something, you know, who's going to come to our rescue? What, China?
Actually, if they were identified, you could shut it down in a day, and everyone has access to these people. And if I say who they are over the web or over the phone, no one's going to believe it, and it's just going to go dead. But they are in every community. They're in your schools. They're in your city council. And they are one specific group that has done everything. And they own Hollywood. Let's put it that way.
All right.
And
so
every last one of them is in on it. I actually spent 2 years investigating that group. And I learned a lot of things in those 2 years.
I'm going to say the Z word and say Zionist. But the point I'm coming at is that if they were alone, like, you know, a handful of them, they obviously have infiltrated and have cohorts in high places here that are going along with this.
Well, what it is that they're really, really good at manipulating and getting people to follow them. And so it doesn't matter if they go out and do it. If we do it to ourselves, they've got us. And if they can convince us we should rat on our neighbors because they have a gun, or rat on our neighbors because they have food storage, or rat on our neighbors because they're planning something, they've won. Because all they have to do is snuff people off one at a time. And that's the state that we're in. We are in that condition now.
Yeah, and it looks like they are so arrogant and we are so disorganized. And is that they don't even have to do anything. You know,
I think we're going to destroy ourselves. They've got us, you know, into a mindset we're just going to take ourselves out.
So, I mean, you know, that's why I don't agree with some of my talk show host peers who say that, you know, the people are being watched and harassed and whatnot. Is that I go, yeah, okay, fine, maybe, but they don't have to. I mean, it's like you go out into the general public, go to a mall, go to some a football game, go to some general cross section of public. I don't mean like a particular concert but talk about this stuff. People think you're crazy. I mean, the vast majority of this country, you know, they may say, well, we don't approve about Congress, or we think there's something else behind 9/11, but that's it. They're out there, you know. And so I it's not that I'm saying we shouldn't try, and, you know, and I want to. Obviously I'm doing the show, and I'm definitely not getting rich doing it. My point is that I'm not worried about talking about it in public as much, because they don't have to do anything. They just sit back and just kind of laugh. You know, something has to change, and I don't know what that change is. And there's got to be something we can do, and I don't know what that is. And I'm searching for it, and I'm open to it.
What it is, the best thing that could ever happen to this country right now is to have the dollar bill just fall apart and have people start starving. Because when they start starving, they start looking for a reason why. And then as soon as people are not comfortable in their existence, they start looking for answers, and they get a lot more.
See, but that is exactly why I don't think the dollar will collapse, because
they're doing everything they can to keep it from going down.
Because it's like it's like the scenario of the frog in the pot. You want to turn it up to 1 degree at a time until they cook them. You don't want to like all of a sudden shock them by having, whoa, it's really hot, you know. And I don't know I don't know what that threshold is. I don't know where that point of no return is. I don't know what the critical mass is. I don't know. I don't know that.
Well, if they succeed in taking out some, you know, I know what the critical, what the point of no return is, where people actually will stand up and rebel. There's enough people that still believe in the Bible and things like that, which means that the mark of the beast, the chip in the hand, is the final wall. And people, they are going to have so much resistance with that. And they want it bad. They want that bad. They want the chip in the hand for buying selling.
Right. I don't want to get off topic of this because we have stuff here, but let me just take an example. They've trained us, if I can use this term, to watch for the chip in the hand. So what you do is you do the chip in the hand without the chip in the hand, and if you have the biometric card that's tied to your bio, whether it be your eye or what have you, it is as good as the chip in the hand, only it's not the chip in the hand, and therefore it doesn't trigger that chip in the hand knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, but there's also the number to his name. So that follows the bio card. They're having big troubles because the number to his name, you know, the mark or the number, that card represents the number.
Yeah, but see, a lot of the people who are into the number of the beast are sitting around waiting for the rapture and not doing much about it. So I don't mean to sound bitter, but the people sitting around waiting for the rapture are sitting on their hands, and they're not doing something about it. So, you know, they've been disarmed with the scenario of the rapture, so they're just sitting around waiting. You have people waiting for 2012 to come in. You have people waiting for aliens to come down. You know, and
you know,
so,
you know, I'm worried the rapture happened and none of us made it.
No, it doesn't, because see, you know, I've studied the Bible a lot on my own for many years, and the whole scenario is what I call the poison pen gospel. It is created by melding together certain verses and certain interpretations. It is not in the Bible as presented. It is created from all of that. So I want to get people away from the rapture. Forget the aliens. Forget the rapture. If Jesus comes, I'll be as happy as the next guy. But we're here. We're God with skin on it, so to speak. We are the people who are supposed to be doing things about it. Now, what I want to know is what to do. And I'm not getting answers from people. I get a lot of people on the radio. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people who make a living doing radio shows, scaring people, talking about what's happening. And I don't hear answers. And when I try to get these people on the air and on the radio, say, well, let me give an answer. What do we do? What do we do? I don't hear anything. Because they're making a living out of being the person who's warning. And that's fine. You need people who are town criers. But we need solutions. And I don't have any. I don't see anybody. I'm doing this 9 years, and I've had everything from Planet X to, you know, aliens attacking the world to, you know, all this stuff, and I don't have solutions. Now, I think one good thing of what you're doing here is you're pointing out a smoking gun that is even more obvious, I think, than as presented anyway, as the 9/11 stuff. You know, this is,
they made so many major blunders with this one that are so technically provable. You know, anyone can go over those seismograms just with average intelligence, study them for a while, and figure out the earthquake wasn't real. Anyone can look at the picture of Reactor 3 and see that it really is gone. Why weren't we told?
Mm-hmm.
Most people, or many people out there, know that you can't just blow up a nuclear plant by getting it wet. What happened at Fukushima was so impossible. If you took nuclear plant...
You made your point quite well, but what's coming from this now is what happens shortly thereafter. They have, let's look and see what reactors we have that might be in danger. And all of a sudden,
at Browns Ferry. That's why I talked about Browns Ferry, and I use Browns Ferry as a reference. Because Browns Ferry is the clone of Fukushima in America. That's the reason why all my references go to Browns Ferry.
What I'm saying is that they've already started very shortly afterwards to say, let's see how this can happen in America, and they came up with a list of places that need to be guarded against this type of thing. They're already setting us up for something that could go wrong like that. I mean, they are immediately went, how can this be here? And they came up with this list out of nowhere of all these reactors that are now all of a sudden vulnerable, that no one ever figured out was vulnerable. And I said, I said that one of the things they brought up was a reactor that's 10 miles from my house. And I'm going, really?
Yeah.
Really? A lot of earthquakes hit the Midwest, and a lot of tsunamis hit the Midwest. So how could this possibly be a risk? You know, it's just ludicrous.
Well, the thing is they can generate earthquakes, and they can generate floods. They can create a scenario. They could have a tornado taken out. A 5.0 tornado hit it. You know, they've got the weather modification well established. You know, 5.0 tornado hits a nuclear plant, it blows up. Tsunami hits a nuclear plant.
Yeah, well, you know,
blows
I
up.
Probably.
Hurricane hits a nuclear plant, it blows up.
But I think if a tornado actually hit, an F5 hit a nuclear plant, it probably would withstand it because of the way it was built. But
so people don't know that. People believe
right.
the tsunami took
right.
out Fukushima. I need to explain something. All right, hold on.
We'll come back and you have the floor. You can explain it, but we're going to take a break.
Okay. I'm going to get back to Fukushima and explain a couple of things.
Okay.
That couldn't happen.
All right, we'll go there. And so hold on. We're talking with Jim Stone about Fukushima actually being nuked and perhaps scalyard, if that's such a word. And we'll be back to continue after this.
Yeah, I'll tell you, once you wake up and you see, you can't go back. It is a one-way trip. And I'm making that journey, and I realize that. And as I see things, you can't go back. I mean, everything from watching old TV shows to doing things that used to concern me. And it's like once you see what's going on, you can't go back. There is no way to go back home. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, but you can go forward. And you have to make a stand, I think. Yeah, I think these times I don't know if there's a solution. In other words, I don't think we can change things per se. I'm not going to say we can't, and I'm game for it. But it looks to me like you have to make a stand. You have to live your life the right way and make a stand, and whatever comes is in God's hands. But be available. Be Jesus with skin on it, and a good phrase I like. And take the high ground while you are here. And, of course, that has never changed. That's been life since the beginning. But I think now, with all the stuff around us, it definitely shows exactly what life is. And life is living and making a stand and living love in the midst of all this trouble. Anyway, we have Jim Stone back talking about Fukushima. And let's get back into the Fukushima. Welcome back, Jim.
Hi. I got a little bit sidetracked on the last half hour. What I need to do is walk people through why Fukushima was impossible. If you can open up link number 11.
Okay.
And it's the real emergency backup systems. One thing that people don't realize about Fukushima and nuclear power in general is your backup systems. The electrical backup systems, your diesel generators, are pretty much only there to keep business as usual. The real emergency backup systems at a nuclear facility don't need any electricity at all to function. And that's why Fukushima was impossible. The swamping of the external generators by the tsunami was irrelevant because the real emergency backup systems are driven by steam from the reactors themselves. So in other words, when your power goes offline and your steam that's normally coming out of that reactor to turn your turbine, when you don't need that power and you can't turn that generator anymore because the reactor is putting out too much, putting out too much should be putting through an idle generator without overspinning it. You enter an emergency backup mode, and that steam is used to spin cooling pumps to cool the reactor off. So losing your diesel generators to spin electrical cooling pumps is irrelevant if you're supposed to have backup steam turbine pumps that do the exact same job.
Actually, that's brilliant. That makes a lot of sense. You're sure going to have plenty of steam.
There's no way Fukushima could have. You know, when Fukushima blew up, when Fukushima got hit by the tsunami, and everybody, you know, I heard on the news that a nuclear plant got hit by a tsunami, my thought was why does that matter? Because I understood reactor systems good enough so that I knew that that couldn't cause any problem at all. The only thing you're going to do when you kick off all electricity to that nuclear power plant, what is supposed to happen is the steam from that reactor is supposed to start powering pumps rather than turn a generator. Well, the problem is that at reactors 1, 2, and 3, all fueled reactors, those systems activated immediately, just like they should when the generator went off, when the generator is cut off. The trouble is that within 11 minutes at reactor 1, that system shut itself off. And the only way that it can shut itself off if it gets a powered command from the controller to shut itself off. Well, then here we get into Stuxnet. This Magna BSP company came out of Dimona, Israel, where Stuxnet was written. And if you go back to, let me see here. I've got the links for this here. I've got to get back to that page. Oh, I'm not on that page anymore. Anyway,
there's a link. Stuxnet is documented. It's number 20.
Yeah, Stuxnet is documented to have been written by the Israeli Defense Forces. Those three links are critical because everybody has been saying, well, we don't know where Stuxnet came from. Well, the Israelis have bragged about and celebrated and videos on YouTube and everything about writing Stuxnet and destroying Iran's nuclear program with it. Well, 4 months later, after Japan offers to enrich uranium for Iran, out of the exact same within a mile of where Stuxnet was written, here comes a security company and gets access to the heart of Fukushima. Well, Japan obviously is an enemy now, and they need to be taken out every bit as bad as Iran. This security company, because I didn't get an admission from them directly, you'll never get an admission that they actually stuck a flash drive in one of those PLCs to infect Fukushima with this virus. But I did get the proof in an article written in the Jerusalem Post that they had a full-time, unauthorized data connection to the SCADA system in that facility via a connection that they had made to one of their cameras, one of their nuke cameras in that facility. So here we have the security company having a totally unauthorized data connection into the heart of Fukushima, into the reactor rooms, and all those SCADA systems are interlinked. And it could have probably jumped out of Fukushima and gone over to some of the other reactors that acted up after the tsunami, too, which is impossible. But they had other reactors have problems. And it's virtually impossible. Well, these emergency systems activated at Fukushima. That's the bottom line. At all three reactors, they activated. At reactor one, they cut off after 11 minutes. And reactor one promptly went into meltdown, because if you cut off those emergency systems within 3 hours of shutting a reactor down, the reactor will, even though it's been scrammed and it's not doing anything to perpetuate a chain reaction, the breakdown of some of the highly radioactive isotopes will keep that reactor hot and keep it generating heat. So you need those cooling pumps running to prevent a meltdown, even though the reactor is shut off. At reactor one, that system was told to shut off outside the control of the operators, and the operators couldn't get it to turn back on 11 minutes after the generators cut off. With reactor two, those systems shut down 3 hours after the electricity was lost. And at reactor three, those systems shut down on day two. They shouldn't ever shut down, because how a semi functions, it has air pressure, and as long as it has air pressure, the brakes are off.
Right.
When you release air pressure on a semi, when your brakes are failed, that means that they're on. If you have a brake problem with a semi, those brakes are on. With a brake problem with a car, they're off. But with a brake problem with a semi, that truck is so dangerous that its default mode is the brakes have to be told to shut off. This emergency backup system at Fukushima actually needs a powered command to keep it from activating. And the fact that it did activate means that in that facility, something still had power and fed those valves the signal they needed to shut off. Well, Magna BSP bragged to the Jerusalem Post after Reactor 3 had exploded that they maintained a full-time data connection to their cameras all the way through in that reactor.
And that's 24, number 24 for those listening.
Yes. That page is my internet's down right now. It's a long story, but I've been having lots of problems since I typed this article. It's a long story. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, okay.
I just got to kind of wing it now. But the only way here we have power dead at this facility. Batteries die in 8 hours, and there's so many things. They actually brought in generators from off-site before the backup batteries to turn the cooling pumps died. They have backup batteries there. They actually brought in off-site power, and they had sufficient power available there within 8 hours of that. The roads were in perfect shape because there was no earthquake. They managed to drive these huge generators in. And when they tried to hook them up, the switchgear would not let them turn on the power to the facility. Well, all these systems are linked in to the SCADA system that can be infected by Stuxnet. So here's a system telling them that they can't activate this power that they brought in. You can't get the switches to work. The only way that that can happen is the controller telling it not to activate. There are so many aspects to this story. So we have the regular, the standard steam-powered backups not working. We have the electrical backups not working, and the generators, one of those generators actually kept running, and one was enough to keep that facility safe. It kept running even despite the other ones cutting off, which never got flooded, but because they're in the turbine rooms. That's another story. You have to read the article at Fukushima, jimstonefreelance.fukushima, or /fukushima.html. You have to read that article to get all this. But here we have a facility where power has been brought in. They can't hook it up. They got a generator working. The switchgear is telling it you can't use it. They've got emergency backup systems that are functioning, and they shut off all by themselves. Well, with a data link leaving, and so here is a scenario that I think really happened at Fukushima. And I'm just going to read this because I've got it really well written. I'm going to read it straight off the site.
Okay.
I've got a backup here running. I honestly believe that Japan is being held a nuclear hostage. It all makes sense. Number one, Japan offers to enrich uranium for Israel's great state in Iran. Number two, immediately Israel sets up front companies masquerading as security companies, and one of them succeeds in getting a security contract at a Japanese nuclear facility. 4 months later, the Dimona Dozen shows up, and under the cover of a security contract, gets unlimited access to the heart of Fukushima. They plant the virus, install real cameras outside the facility, and functional, poorly disguised new cameras inside the facility. In addition to this, they install unauthorized data connection to allow control of all the guts of the facility via the virus. And they admitted this to this connection in an article in the Jerusalem Post. After installing Stuxnet and the nuke space scram, Israel waits for one of the many natural quakes, which is how I wrote the article. Until I only came up with this information about the possibility of creating earthquakes this morning. The tsunami comes in, swamps Stuxnet. Okay. Israel awaits for one of the many natural quakes in Japan to provide cover for the tsunami bomb, and they already have the nuke at the bottom of the Japan Trench. VLF communications are established for the bomb to penetrate the water. David and Dimona get seismic readings from Japan. 6.67 in progress. Boom. Tsunami comes in and swamps the Stuxnet-affected power plant, and direct video feed from legitimate cameras they installed gets back to David and Dimona via a totally unauthorized channel, and David knows just when to cut the generators off. Others on the team do all they can to counteract emergency measures taken by the employees at Fukushima who are unaware an attack is taking place and do not understand why everything is going crazy. Israeli Prime Minister calls Japan and says, take that for offering to help Iran. And you know, there are five more nukes in the ocean off the coast of Japan, and we are going to set those off and destroy your coastal cities. If you do not forget all about that 6.67 and say it was a 9 to cover for tsunami effects. And now we are going to make your people demand you move away from nuclear power so you can never threaten us like that again. We are going to blow up Fukushima, and you're just going to go along with whatever story we tell you. So David and his pals close all the valves to the reactors via the remote link they admitted to installing and put them to full throttle to melt them down, while the virus keeps control room readouts displaying false info like nothing is going on, even though the place is coming apart. After enough mayhem ensues to provide plausibility, they set up a plastic nukes and blow the place sky high. And that is how Reactor 4 is Building 7. That's how you get a reactor that has been completely disassembled and cannot do anything to explode. And even though, I didn't get every single detail, I think I've got enough because the seismic data proves beyond a doubt that the quake was not what we were told and was, in fact, an inland 6.8, and which was calculated by that higher than the 6.67 that, that we talked about because that seismic station is never going to be right at the epicenter, so they triangulated it to a 6.8. Numerous reference sources prove that Stuxnet really was written by Israel. And Japan really did offer to enrich uranium for Iran, and Israel has been documented to have already destroyed one nuclear program in Iran and probably did. And Japan contributing to Iran's nuclear future would have made them just as much an enemy to Israel as Iran. Israel would want them taken out. It is documented that a team from Israel with history only consisting of working in Israeli defense got unlimited access to a Japanese nuclear facility, which then exploded. Reactor 4 had been defueled and proven disassembled, and therefore no explosion there was possible. What should have happened at Reactor 4, if anything at all? The fuel pool should have melted down and caught fire once the water boiled off from a lack of recirculation at worst and badly contaminated the containment structure. Nothing else. And, you know, and that's the thing is the inside containment walls are like over 8 feet thick, probably 12 feet thick. I never could get the specification for that. But they blew so badly that Reactor 4 is in danger of falling over. And I'd like to know how that happened. Are you still there?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, okay.
I'm just letting you know so we get this all in. I want to get this all in.
And then the Japanese government is going along with the story of a scientifically proven false 9.0 earthquake. You can see the pictures. You can see the seismograms. Nothing happened there other than a tsunami. There is a reason why they're going along with this story, and my guess is that Israel has made threats to wipe out Japan's coastal cities with additional tsunamis. If the government of Japan speaks a word of what went on, there should be no reason for Japan to go along with this crazy story other than a continued threat. Is it not interesting that this quake happened, you know, at the bottom of the Japan Trench? I only found out that it really, they were saying that it happened at the bottom of the Japan Trench, but when you map out where this nuke actually went off by their star in the ocean, it's not in the Japan Trench. It's about 20 miles inland, you know, closer to the land from the Japan Trench. Now, here we get the kicker. The Department of Homeland Security canceled a meeting about Stuxnet at TakedownCon. TakedownCon is a conference where it's an industrial conference where industrial facility operators get to know or learn about how to secure their facilities. Department of Homeland Security has advised the cancellation of all discussion of Stuxnet. And my belief for the reason for that is because they want to keep the threat alive. They want this thing out there so our reactors are vulnerable to it, so they can get their disasters here. And I guess, you know, we're getting kind of close to the end of the program, so I'm just going to let people go at that. Consider that. We need such a massive awareness on this subject just to prevent a disaster in this country, because they're not picking favorites. They want dominance. They want control. And it doesn't matter who they hurt or what they do to get it. America is a little bit too much of a rebel for them. They're pretty upset with this country. It didn't just fall over like Europe did. We are the last stand. And they, I really believe they have a plan for us that isn't pretty at all. And so basically that's my word. That's what I had to say.
Now you say they.
The elite. I want to not allude to Zionists and you know what that means. I want to keep away from that as much as possible, even though that is what we're talking about. You know,
We'll say the Zionists being a more of the military arm of this group that run, you know, runs the world.
No. I've been inside that community for 2 years. It's every last one of them. You'll get your occasional good one, like Mike Rivero, or your occasional good one, who is the guy that just died of cancer? gosh, I can't believe it. Aaron Russo.
Yeah.
Aaron Russo was a good one. Not all of these people are off the edge, but I'll tell you right now, about 95% of them are. They are on the same sheet of paper. And it doesn't matter if they're Orthodox or Reform or Conservative or anything else. They're or Sephardic. They're all on the same sheet of paper. I've sat in their meetings and heard them brag about having control of the government and the medical system, the educational system, and the media and the communications and everything else. They have us in the bag. They've got it. They know it. And You know, what can I say?
I like using the term, because see, for me, it's not about an ethnicity, or it's not. It's a state government. All governments are evil.
Yeah. Well, it's what we got here is a group that wants world dominance at any cost.
Right. Right. And this.
And it is political, because you know when face to face they're really nice, and among their own group they're decent people like anyone else. But you know, every group tends to have its tendency towards dominating everything, and they've had a lot of success.
Yeah. We're at the end. And so you're going to keep up this page with some references on your page, so people who listen to the show can go to the website, jimstonefreelance.com, and there'll be some link to take you through so people can follow the bouncing balls. You may update it as time goes, but this way they can you can follow it. And it will be rebroadcast, like I mentioned, and the archives will go up, and thousands more will be aware of this, and they can get a hold of you through your website at jimstonefreelance.com while you and your website still exist, that is.
I've had some trouble.
Yeah, so I you gave me a list of things to do, so I started to call people and let them know that I wasn't planning suicide, I don't have cancer, and whatnot, because this should be known prior to anything happening. So I'm hoping it doesn't come to that, but I'm glad you did the show. You have some very good data that has to be answered if someone's going to say no. So, but we will talk again. Maybe we could continue on another show. But Jim Stone, thank you for your time and your effort.
Yes, thank you very much. You know, I was a little bit brief, but I kind of wanted this to be intense, and so maybe next time we can be a little bit more relaxed.
All right, so hang in there.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll be back next week. If the creeks don't rise, and they are rising, Lord willing, reach for the skies within.